That is, that means they call it.
Call to order the Santa Claus County Board of Supervisors meeting, January 23rd, 2007. All rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. First thing on the agenda today is presentation for Employee Service Awards. And I think we're starting with Doug Farms. And I think we have all of our honorees come forward here.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, members of the board. I'm here to introduce Janice Reinke. Janice started in the assessor's office in 1971 as an account clerk one, promoted to an account clerk two, and then became a supervising account clerk in 1982. She's been our office's equal rights officer for longer than I can remember. I actually tried to find out, and it's been so long, I haven't found out. She's been a member of the California Assessor's Office Managers Association, and well, it'd be really easy for me to stand here and tell you what a wonderful employee Janice is. And I could go on about the different jobs she's done and how she's helped make the assessor's office successful. I'm going to read some stuff because I think it's more important what our citizens think about Janice than what I may think. So I got a letter in 1991, and it says this: "It is an unfortunate fact of life that people often take the time to complain when service is substandard, yet say nothing when an individual performs extraordinary service. This afternoon, one of your employees performed above and beyond the call of duty. It was my pleasure to have the good fortune to be assisted by Janice Reinking, who markedly improved my opinion of Stanislaus County employees." 1995, we got this. On November 28th, my wife and I paid a visit to the assessor's office, and we were expecting the normal treatment offered by municipal agencies. We were pleased to tell you that your supervisor, Janice Reinking, was very helpful and escorted us through the entire procedure. Her interest and concern with our problem has changed our opinion of agencies such as yours." It doesn't stop. In 1996, Janice got this note: "I can't thank you enough for going out of your way to help us. It is so common these days to be treated with indifference and even rudeness by people everywhere. It is refreshing to know there are still people out there like yourself who are truly kind and caring." Just last year, Janice got this: "Just a note to thank you for helping me. You're a godsend." Janice's concern about the community doesn't just stop in our office, though. She was a member of the Kiwanis Group Club of Greater Modesto from 1997 through 2004. She served on the Community Hospice Board for 2 years, and she's now serving on the Community Hospice Foundation Board. She's been with the Friends of Hospice since 1992 and has twice served as the president. She's helped locally with the American Heart Association. So while she's here today to be honored for her 35 years of service to the people of Stanislaus County, you know, I'm not here just to honor her. I'm here to thank her and to introduce Janice Reinke.
And Janice, I heard that you're an avid Raiders fan. So I think it's great you're being honored for 35 years today, as well as the naming a new head coach today. And I see you're wearing Raider colors, so that's just great.
And that wasn't planned.
On behalf of the Board of Supervisors, congratulations on your 35 years, and thank you so much for your service.
Thank you very much.
I want to thank my boss and friend, Doug Harms, for those kind words and for all of the people that I work with in the office that took the time to come down here for this presentation. I don't think I'm going to cry. I have a few tears, but I think I'm going to just celebrate the day, and I appreciate the support of everyone in my office. When I was up here for my 25th and my 30th, I had a little poem that I had written, and so I thought, well, we can't let this day go by without one either. So now it's a real test to see if I can get through this, but I think I can. From Broadwell to Triplett, DeFerrari, now Harms, to these men I owe my thanks for giving me a job I thoroughly enjoyed, plus some money to put in the bank. To work in one office for 35 years seems really to be quite a feat. Of all the things I've liked the most, it's the people I've been able to meet. Computer programs have come and gone, telephone systems the same. But one thing I've learned throughout all these years is that change is the name of the game. Speaking of changes, there's been more than a few. I can't remember them all. But some stand out for the impact they made, and those I can recall. Women could only wear dresses or skirts when I started in 71. But when Dave came in, he let us wear pants, and coming to work became more fun. When Mike was elected and became our boss, flex time came on the scene. This privilege to schedule the hours in a week, we all know just how much that does mean. Now this brings us to Doug. There's no finer man. He's giving, supportive, and fair. As our boss, team leader, and most of our friends, he proves that he truly does care. Now, when I retire is still up for grabs. I haven't quite made up my mind. And that's mostly because I know it'll be hard to leave my coworkers behind. For as I first said at the start of this poem, lots of people I've met have been great. But those in my office whom I work with each day, I think of this family and they're simply first rate. Thank you.
And I also have a letter from Congressman George Radonovich. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien and members of the board. Sonia Herfeld. And it is my pleasure this morning to introduce to you Jim Simpson. Jim was raised in Kerman, California, and went to Fresno State, where he graduated as an environmental health specialist. He came to us from Marin County in 1976. And I guess for me, when I started with the county, Jim was always an individual who I look up to. When I started with the county, the Hazardous Materials Division was just formed, and Jim was the waste expert. I mean, whether it was asbestos or hazardous waste, Jim was the one that you went to because Jim always had all the answers. And over the years, he's been responsible for implementing the Household Hazardous Waste Program. He also implemented the U-Waste program, or the Universal Waste program, last year, as well as the E-Waste program, which we all refer to as electronic waste, which has become quite a popular program out at Morgan Road, as well as for many of the municipal agencies. Jim's been responsible for the underground storage tank program, the disclosure program, the hazardous waste generator program. He's basically been the hazardous waste guru for our department for the last 20 years, because that's how long I've been in hazardous materials. So anyway, Jim is married. He has a very lovely wife, Denise. And Denise has always been very patient with me. You have to understand, when we were on the hazardous materials response team, it was quite frequently we would be calling one another in the middle of the night. And I'd call and I'd say, "Hello, Denise. This is Sonia. Is Jim around?" Jim also has four lovely children. He's got Elizabeth, Cook, Neil, and Annie. Joe's eldest daughter, Elizabeth, and her husband, Jay, are very proud parents of Maya. And you'd have to walk into Jim's office because he's got this wonderful screensaver of Maya on this little pony. And every time you turn around, you should just see the smile on Jim's face when he looks at his granddaughter. Jim's hobbies are he enjoys being close to nature. I can't tell you how many times I've heard stories about Jim hiking in the mountains. It has to be one of his most favorite things to do, as well as gardening. Jim does plan to retire, which I'm very sad to hear. He's told me that it's going to be March of next year. So anyway, it is with my great pleasure and to introduce you to my friend and my hazardous materials manager, Jim Simpson. Thank you, Jim, for 30 years.
Now, I've always heard that DER was the happiest place on earth, but I understand that's one of your favorite vacation spots down at Disneyland with your kids and your grandchild, down to the happiest place on earth. Well, Jim, congratulations on 30 years. Thank you so much for your service.
Well, thank you, Sonia, for those kind words. I really appreciate it. It's amazing, you stop and think about it, at least I think about it. 30 years have gone by, and it just seems like it was just overnight. I first want to thank my first director, Jim Mankin, when I first was hired here back in 1976. He's no longer with us, but he gave me the opportunity to first come to work for this county and with this department. I want to thank Sonia for allowing me to stay and continue all this time. And also I want to thank Rick and the board members for the opportunity and the pleasure to serve you and the citizens of Stanislaus County. Lastly, I'd like to and mostly thank my wife, Denise, and my children for all their love and support for all these years. Thank you.
Good morning, Mary Ann Lee from the Health Services Agency, and I'm here this morning to introduce Paul Kolda and celebrate his 30 years of service. Paul was in the U.S. Army from 1967 to 1969, where he served our country in Vietnam. Paul received his bachelor's from Sac State in 1973 in social work. He came to work for our county in 1976. His experience as a nursing student and medic in the Army helped prepare him for his role here as a medical examiner. He was hired by Dr. Robert Watson, health officer of our public health department at the time. Paul points out that he's the second only medical examiner hired by the county. He replaced the first medical examiner that was hired back in 1949. Paul has worked in the sexually transmitted disease unit, examining patients and providing prevention-based education to patients on-site and in the community, including in the schools. In this role, Paul acts somewhat like a PI, a private investigator, where he is working to detect, control, and prevent the spread of STDs. His work has prevented disease, and it has saved many dollars that would have been spent on treatment and other health-related losses. I think it's amazing when someone works in an agency for 30 years, but it's even more amazing when someone works in the same field of service for all of those years. Paul has watched the STD program expand to meet the health trends and community needs, including work on HIV/AIDS that began in the 80s. He takes pride on being the senior member of his unit. His years in the field outnumber the collective years of many of his younger colleagues. In fact, I've recently learned that one of Paul's colleagues in recent years in public health was the granddaughter of Dr. Robert Watson, who hired him back in 76. Paul takes pride in having served as the longest union representative for SCEA. He started as a job steward shortly after becoming a county employee and has continued to serve. He's recently been elected to the union board. Paul prides himself on being flexible. I've learned from some of those he works more closely with that sometimes he goes by the nickname Gumby. That willingness to be flexible has allowed him to continue making a positive impact through more than 30 years of county and community change. Paul's commitment to service and the well-being of the community comes from earlier experiences, including values that were instilled in him by his parents. His father was a public servant for more than 30 years. Paul's been married for 25 years and has 3 children. He has enjoyed being active and participating in sports. He's also contributed to the community in sports by being a youth soccer coach for over 10 years. Paul, thank you for your many years of service. You've shown your relentless commitment to protecting and improving the public's health, and for that we're grateful. Congratulations on 30 years.
Paul, on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, congratulations and thank you very much for your service. As well as the certificate from Congressman Radonovich.
Sure. I've never been one to be short on words, but I did bring my union rep with me today to keep me under control. So, but it's been, in the words of the great philosopher Jerry Garcia, a long, strange trip. And you know, when I came back from Vietnam in the 60s, we had a saying, let's make love, not war. And since I got into the business of public health, ever since then, I've been making war on making love. So I'm just up here to be grateful to the troops that have fought with me along the way, the leaders that I've served with, some of the outstanding people, Cleemore, who's been my inspiration for all these years, all the doctors I've served under, Dr. Walker on back, all the people that have put up with the unique style which I've had to use in order to do the things we have to do, and I've done it with a sense of pride and good conscience, and I've never had any regrets about how we serve the people at all levels of our community. Marianne asked me yesterday about the highlight of my career, and I had to think a little bit about it, but the story goes, about 20-some-odd years ago, 8 years ago, Adrian, my wife, was working at DDR, Environmental Resources, and she got a dog bite. And I was working up front in the clinic at the time. Well, I just happened to be the guy working up there with the white coat on. And so they said, go up there and see the doctor and have him check your dog bite out. So she didn't realize I wasn't a physician. I was just up there with the white coat, a guy with the white coat, right? So she came up and walked into my office and said, you want to check out my leg? And I said, sure. And the rest is history. We're still together. She's still working for the county. So, so that kind of summarizes my lifestyle, my life, and I guess the interesting thing now is that you get to be a place so long, people come back that have been before, and you constantly hear, are you still here? Not how you doing, what's going on, are you still here? So yes, I'm still here, I still plan on being here, the things we fight for are always going to be there, and I appreciate the support of the board, and keep sending us the dollars, and thanks Marianne for everything.
Sounds like Paul uses a little humor to do a very difficult job.
Good morning. My name is Larry Hall. I'm the County Auditor Controller. Chairman O'Brien, board members, and it's my pleasure to introduce Stephen Smith to you today. After graduating from Stanislaus State University, Stephen worked for 2 local accounting firms here in town. He was hired by City General Hospital, as it was called back then, as Assistant Controller in October 1981. In April of 93, Stephen transferred to the auditor's office and took the position of chief internal auditor at that time. He was later promoted to chief deputy under Brian Bystrom in 1987. And then in April in 2002, it was my pleasure to promote him to the assistant auditor controller. During the course of Stephen's employment, he's had many challenges and opportunities, just to give you a few of those. He was part of the team that developed the training case study for the 3-day in-house Baldrige training. He was also in the transition team that helped coordinate the move from the 8th Street location of the auditor's office to 10th Street. He has served as the department's injury management coordinator, served as the purchasing card practices TQM team lead. He was responsible for developing the county's plan for the Governmental Accounting Standards Board Statement 34 implementation, which was a new requirement for financial reporting on a countywide state basis. He was part of the initial installation team that said goodbye to the county's first automated accounting system and implemented a new accounting system in 1985. Stephen repeated that role again in 1997 as the year 2000 approached, and we implemented a new Oracle financial system at that time. And then later he was involved with the upgrade in 2004 of the same financial system. Stephen's had a lot of experience in implementing new systems. On a personal note, Stephen is a certified public accountant and continues to be active in that field, benchmarking, keeping abreast of new guidelines and requirements. He actively participates in the Government Finance Officers Association Applications Users Group, County Auditors Association of California Accounting and Reporting Managers Group, and is a member of the Accounting Standards and Procedures Committee, member of the Accounting Institute of Certified Public Accountants, and Association of Local Government Auditors. Stephen managed and supervised many of the divisions over the years in the auditor's office, and he's done so with integrity and skill. On a personal note, Stephen and his wife Marilyn have been married 26 years and they have two daughters, Melissa 23 and Amanda 21. When he's away from work, Stephen is active in church activities, enjoying spending time with his family. He is an avid outdoorsman, enjoys fishing and other activities outdoors. And I want to personally thank Stephen for the excellent service that he's provided to the auditor's office over the years and to the citizens of the county for the past 25 years. Please join me in congratulating Stephen for the 25 years of service.
Stephen, I also understand you're an avid bicycle rider and you just completed a 100-mile ride. Congratulations. On behalf of the Board of Supervisors, congratulations for 25 years and thank you for everything you do for our community.
Thank you, Larry. Yeah, I'm that guy that rides to work in his shorts most mornings. But yeah, got here in a hurry. You don't realize how fast the years go until you stop and think about all the projects you've worked on. And like with my CPA license, when I go to a continuing education seminar, you have to put down your license number, and you realize that yours is the smallest number there. You've been around for a while. I just really want to thank all the auditor's office staff and my wife for taking the time to come down here this morning. Thank you.
Chairman O'Brien, Board of Supervisors, I'm Lee Lundgren, Stanislaus County Clerk Recorder and Registrar of Voters. I'm pleased to present this 25-year staff recognition award today to a very important person in our office, Claudette Trawick, and to celebrate her as a longtime Stanislaus County staff member. 28 years ago, Dwayne E. Lilly was our elected county clerk recorder. Patrick O'Sullivan was the assistant clerk recorder, and in March 1979, Claudette Trawick began work with the county. When Claudette first began, the clerk recorder department was still doing handwritten entries in the vital record area. She was a filming clerk trainee through the CEDIS program, and the office was located on the second floor of the courthouse. On April 13, 1981, 25 years ago, Claudette became a full-time county legal clerk one. She began examining and recording legal documents, assisting customers in locating recorded documents, processing maps, and performing financial statement searches. In the 1980s, David Worm was our elected county clerk recorder, and Claudette worked her way up to legal clerk three. Her jobs continued to expand, and her historic knowledge of the office became legendary. 17 years ago, in September 1989, Claudette was there when the clerk recorder's office moved to 912 11th Street. The elections office was on the main floor, the clerk recorder division on the second floor, and adult probation in the basement. That November, Karen Matthews was elected county clerk recorder, and Pat Seidel was the assistant clerk recorder. In June 1995, nearly 12 years ago, Claudette helped the clerk recorder's office move again, this time from 912 11th Street to its current downtown location at 1021 I Street in Modesto. 2 years ago, the county clerk elected recorder, I was the county elected recorder when Claudette took over the duties of primary official records copier, where she continues to work today under the direction of the assistant clerk recorder, Marvin Hackett. Throughout 25 years, four elected clerk recorders, four assistant clerk recorders, and three office moves, Claudette has consistently worked for and supported the clerk recorder's office. Over the past 25 years, county employees have discovered that they must shift their focus from processes to results, and from not just following rules, but to serving our customers and our local government. We have realized our people are the most valuable assets we have in Santa Claus County. People do the work, people make new technology efficient, and people deliver results. Claudette is one of these loyal employees who is the lifeblood of any flourishing organization and absolutely critical to the success of Santa Claus County government and to our clerk recorder's office. Claudette is positive and gets along with everyone. With her bright personality and kindness, she is missed on any given day when she is not at work. She continues to see the glass as half full instead of half empty. Claudette is considerate of her coworkers and lends a helping hand when needed. She is the first to ask if copies need to be made or what she can do to make the day lighter and the workflow flow as smooth as possible. When areas are shorthanded and she is asked to assist, she never refuses. She's always happy to lend a helping hand and is instrumental during the end-of-year period in the recorder's office, when as many as 2,500 documents, three times the normal number, are recorded daily. Claudette has received many compliments from the public, telling of her helpfulness and her kindness. Letters and notes have been put into her file noting helpfulness, assisting searchers, title people, and the general public. Claudette's sense of fashion is one of her personal hallmarks. She is both professional and stylish and sets a tone of confidence in our office. Claudette's experience, demeanor, and loyalty serve as the core of her convictions. Her attitude is a true asset to the clerk recorder's office. Claudette has witnessed the office develop from handwritten entries to computer-generated access of official records. She has assisted in many projects over the years and is a keeper of many historic memories. Claudette is consistently willing to do what's needed and to adjust to changes throughout the years. Claudette, thank you. Thank you so much for 25 years of full-time service to Stanislaus County.
When your coworkers were asked, what is Claudette famous for? The overwhelming response was your fashion. So, Claudette, on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, congratulations for your 25 years of service. Thank you for everything you do for that office.
I wasn't going to say very much, but there are a few things I would like to say. When I did first come to Stanislaus County and started working here, it was a big change coming from the big city, but I'm adjusted here now. And I want to thank my friend Ida for showing up. She was one of the first persons when I came to Stanislaus County to work in the recorder's office. She and I handwritten in the entry in the indexes, and my friend Bonnie, she came with a computer system in the 80s. Ida and I said, oh boy, what are we in for now? But it was all positive things that was brought to the recorder's office. And I want to also give a very special thanks to Brent Mathison for always taking me to the mall before I learned to drive, buy my clothes. And a special thanks to Dee Lundgren. A lot of people don't know I suffered a stroke enjoyed my time of working in the county recorder's office, so I want to give her a special thanks for still allowing me the privilege to continue with her staff, even though I sometimes wasn't as sharp as I was 25 years ago. But thank you for bearing with me.
We have a second presentation this morning to declare January 2007 as Quilt Month in Santa Claus County. Dale?
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien, board members, CEO Robinson, and council. My name is Gail Wax, and as a 20-year veteran of the city of Modesto, I can't tell you how fun it is to stand at this podium at no current risk, with no anxiety or stress. I'm here to talk about something fun and something I do during my off hours. I'm here on behalf of the Country Crossroads Quilters Guild here in Modesto. We're a nonprofit organization with more than 100 members, and we're involved in quilting. If you're in your golden years, as I am, you may remember those days that a quilt rack was set up in the kitchen, and your job was to climb underneath the rack in that fortress below. Grandma would send down the needle, and your job was to poke it back up and through as she tied a quilt or put a quilt together as a family heirloom. If you're a little younger, you might think that quilts come from a plastic package at Walmart. And I'm here today to remind everyone that there's still a very active community of people creating this traditional American art, and we're going to be celebrating quilting here in Modesto in a very spectacular way this weekend with a large quilt show, one of the largest in Northern California. Country Crossroads Quilters Guild does charity work throughout the community, donating quilts to children and seniors throughout the community. We also make award-winning quilts that we donate to other nonprofit groups, and then they auction those as fundraisers for their own nonprofit events. We have two events coming up. First, now through January 29th, we have a show at the Anderson Gallery on J Street, 1323 J, called Celebrating the Art of the Quilt. We have 50 show-stopping quilts on display there, and admission is free of charge at any point when the gallery's open. There are also quilt displays here at the McHenry Museum and at the library, so people who'd like to know more about quilting or who don't really want to know more but just love looking at quilts because it brings back memories of their childhood can visit Anderson Gallery, the museum, or the library to see quilts right now. What I'm here to mention, though, and to ask the board to help me celebrate is that this weekend is a very exciting show of more than 200 quilts at the Center Plaza. Yeah, I need a standing flip chart, human flip chart here. And one of the things you may think of when you think of quilting is a quilt like this. This is one that my great-grandmother made, so it's been in my family for about 65 years. And this is a style that everyone is accustomed to, small pieces of fabric put together by hand and quilted by hand. And I have these throughout my house by my great-grandmother, my grandmother, and my mother, and a few by myself, but I'm just starting out and learning, so you'll hold on to that one. But what you'll see at Center Plaza this weekend is that quilting has come a long way, baby. It's not really your grandmother's quilt show anymore. And that quilts now are put together with very bright fabrics and some very elaborate and radical styles, and this is one that my mother made a couple of years ago, and if you'll go that direction, we can show it to the audience as well. That's pretty fun. And what you'll find at Center Plaza this weekend is more than 200 quilts that are flown down low and up high, vignettes celebrating quilting as an art and tradition, speakers, vendors, demonstrations. There's a whole world of quilting you may not know anything about called art quilting, where you'll find quilts that include metal and glass and even some electricity. We'll also have a special gallery that we put together with the local garden club. More than 800 members of the garden club donated photographs of their gardens, and we made quilts that were inspired by those photos. So we'd like to invite everyone from the community to join us this weekend at Modesto Center Plaza, Saturday 10 to 5 and Sunday 10 to 4. Admission is only $6, and children are admitted for free. Our featured artists are Lois Logston and a former county employee, Ruth McCormick, so you'll see a complete display of her work as well. You can find out more about the guild and the charity work that we do at countrycrossroadsquilters.com, and I want to thank you for the time this morning.
Well, thank you for being here this morning, Gail. We do have a proclamation. Whereas the local nonprofit organization, County Crossroads Quilt Guild, is celebrating the truly American art of the quilt during their two-day Heart of the Valley Quilt and Textile Art Show. I just want to let it be known that the San Jose County Board of Supervisors does hereby designate January 1st through January 31st as Quilt Month and encourages employees and all citizens to visit the gallery showing. Thank you for being here this morning. Okay, next item this morning is public comment. I do have a couple specific requests. One is for the 9:20 public hearing, but second is for Mr. Donoso.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Board of Supervisors. I was in the meeting on January 17th in regard to the steering committee meeting with the specific meeting for the cross landing. And to me, it was very confused and, to be honest with you, very disappointed to see the mess and the confusion of that presentation. Number one, the late information the many members received at that time was confusing for a few members. A big book or record of the page was given, and a few members said that one never received it, the other one yet received it, the other one waiting for it to be received. The other information is the package that was served or given the moment for a few members of the Board Supervisor had to read it. And one or two members of the community or the person in the community cannot see the package or receive the package. The second point at the time was two hours and 30 minutes for the presentation. One is 90 minutes from the presenters and 60 minutes was for the steering committee members to discuss. That was to miss a long time. Not only that, the member had to read that the person was doing the presentation at the same time, understanding or receiving the notes and to make the decision later. To me, that's very bad. The other one, the conflict interest, I read in the most to be the one or two members or three members of the committee was in conflict interest before to the presentation. They already received packages and information. So that could be confusing too. The other point was the chairman of the committee was Mr. DeMartini. And later, in the newspaper, the next day, said that maybe the board supervisors, maybe Mr. Grover, said that they're not going to make a decision or go to presentation. You are a member of that committee, of the vice committee, and you're the chairman, Mr. DeMartini. How are you going to be confused not to allow to support or not support a proposal? And to me, that's very confusing because you're a member of that committee, it's a committee. At the same time, you're a member of the board of supervisors and the chairman of that committee. And you cannot vote at the same time. That's very confusing. And the last part of the manipulation of the two sides, meaning the two agencies or proponents even call members of the community before in the phones, on the telephone numbers and the home numbers. And to me, that was not really nice. I see this thing done in Washington, D.C., Sacramento, but never before I see that in Stanislaus County. So, at the same time, the members of the alliance employees and the county employees were having favors to who they are going to support. And to me, that was nice. That was very, very ugly to see how the manipulation under the table in many one or two employees even have the paper given to the consulting firms and put the posters in front, like that was part of his job. At the same time, you have six consultant people there present. They're supposed to do that job, not the employees or the alliance of the county. To me, that's very bad. So my question now to you board members is how the community can have input when you're only giving 15 minutes for each presentation to say something. And the moment one member says, I probably want to make a presentation, you have to have only two questions. To me, that's not really what the community is supposed to do, or the board supervisor. We have to believe that we have that kind of problem. So I wish Mr. Chairman to ask for investigation. I'm going to send a letter to the county grand jury to request, because to me that's a big mess, and we're talking about a lot of jobs. They never mention how much you're going to earn. Nothing. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment in this section of the agenda? Seeing none, we'll move to consent calendar. Anybody wish to remove anything or discuss anything further? Can I have a motion?
Also moved.
Motion by Mr. Mayfield. Second by Supervisor Monteith. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 5-0. Being that we're past the time of 9:20, we'll move to the scheduled matter 9:20, public hearing to consider annexation of territory to the Bystrom Landscape and Lighting District.
Good morning, Chairman O'Brien and members of the Board of Supervisors. I'm David Gein, and I'm with the County Public Works Department. As stated, this is a public hearing regarding North Series annexation to Bystrom Landscape and Lighting District, which was initiated at the request of the residents in the North Series neighborhood. The required ballot procedure for the North Series annexation to Bystrom Landscape and Lighting District is in compliance with Proposition 218. If there's anyone who is here today to submit a ballot, they should do so at this point with the clerk of the board. The deadline to change a ballot is at the end of the public hearing. If there is anyone here today that needs to change a ballot, please proceed immediately to the table in the back, and a public works representative will assist you with that function. Doesn't look like we have anybody that wants to do that. Do you have any questions before you open the public hearing?
Any questions from board members?
Nope. Okay. Chairman, the ballots will be tabulated this afternoon. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit ahead, I believe.
I'm going to open the public hearing for any comments. I do have one specific request from Alila Cannon.
Yes, I've lived on that street for 26 years now, and I don't have a problem with the lighting, and I don't know why we would want landscaping along the street. The streets are full of potholes, quite narrow, and I'm against this. So that's pretty much what I have to say.
Great. Thank you. Any other comments? We'll close the public hearing.
Chair O'Brien, Ron Cherrier with Public Works. Just I'd like to mention that although this district is called a landscape and lighting district, the function, the primary purpose of this district is actually to provide lighting to that particular area. There will not be any landscaping that's proposed for the proposed annexation.
next steps. The clerk will be counting the ballots this afternoon.
Yes, Chairman, the ballots will be tabulated this afternoon, and the results of that tabulation will be presented to the board in the upcoming meeting. I believe it's February 6th.
Mr. Chairman, if there's going to be no landscaping, why would it put down landscaping and lighting? Most of the time when we hear these are just lighting districts. So why would landscaping be put in there? Just for my own curiosity.
There's two different types of districts that can be formed, a highway lighting district and then also a landscape lighting district. They come under different statutes, state law, and for public works, this particular lighting type of lighting district is easier to have the district formed and to provide the services from the particular local utility district. So that's the reason for the difference in the type of lighting district. So in this particular situation, it's actually a landscape and lighting district. There are situations that, such as out in Wesley, that landscaping is provided, but in this particular situation, there's no landscaping that's being provided. But it just okay. The difference is regarding the statutes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And once the ballots are counted, we'll return this back on the upcoming agenda and take final action. Thank you. Okay, we'll move to item D6.
As Chief Henshaw and Assistant Ag Commissioner Robin O'Hare approached the dais, I would like to make just a couple comments. The first is to compliment Milton and Ag staff for their responsiveness and the work that they've done in the last 2 weeks working with the agricultural community, and also Chief Henshaw working with his staff and with city staff and our not-for-profits throughout the community to provide the human response to this freeze situation that we've endured over the last couple of weeks. These two gentlemen are here to provide you an update in the respective areas.
Chairman O'Brien, members of the board, Mr. Doring, Mr. Robinson, Gary Henshaw, your fire warden, Office of Emergency Services. Similar to what we experienced last year with the three weather events that resulted in a local proclamation, Thursday, January 11th, our office called together a county conference call. And I think it's important to recognize who sits on that conference call, because that really makes up the backbone of our community response to any of these events. We contact the 9 cities, and each of the cities has an emergency manager or representative that comes on the line. County departments, we touch just about every county department within the county that serves in some sort of role. Just to mention a few, animal services, community service agency, public health, behavioral health and recovery services, ag commissioner's office, health services agency, area aging and veterans, DER and parks, the sheriff's office and coroner's office, the CEO's office, and we even had some of the field reps for the supervisors on the line as we commenced our county conference call. American Red Cross, and I can't say enough good things about Jim Money and the efforts of that group to support this over the last few days. Our utilities, MID, TID, our 911 centers, Ceres, Turlock, Oakdale, American Medical Response for the ambulance dispatch, and our Stanislaus Regional 911 dispatchers. The Turlock Fairground representatives, we even had representatives from DRAIL, Disability Resource Agency for Independent Living, Dwight Bateman, Mountain Valley EMS Agency. Our Latino Emergency Management Group came on the line, Advancing Vibrant Communities, and they represent our faith-based communities. During that first meeting on Thursday, we reviewed the existing facilities and their capacities that we had already opened in 2 communities. We reviewed the detailed weather forecast for all of the emergency managers as we looked into the next couple of days and watched this cold weather snap coming on. And we established a point of contact for each of the communities should something begin to get a little more dire through the first evening. That evening on January 11th, the governor declared a state of emergency for all 58 counties tied to the cold weather development. On Friday, January 12th, at 10 o'clock in the morning, the state convenes a statewide conference call, and in this case, they really targeted on 38 counties, Central Valley and those that would really experience either ag or human-related from the anticipated freeze. We do a detailed analysis with the Weather Service in both Sacramento and Hanford as it relates to the valley.
At 11 o'clock, we conveyed that information to, again, a county conference call. We expanded our group this time to include hospital representatives, a group that Dr. Walker, Renee Cartier, and the hospitals have established under the direction of the CEO and called the Emergency Preparedness Committee. It represents the pre-hospital, hospital, emergency managers, long-term care, skilled nursing facilities, and fire department representatives. By the end of that morning conference call, we had established these as objectives: monitor the use of homeless shelters and provide additional capacity to determine jurisdiction's needs. Modesto and Truroc utilized existing facilities and worked to extend the hours so that during the very coldest period of the morning, those facilities were open. Establish a plan for communities where they needed additional facilities, they would be available to be opened. Maintain direct line of communications with the Truroc Fairgrounds, because the governor had mentioned that fairgrounds would be available. In our determination, it was not determined that would be a viable solution to us, because Truroc had adequate facilities without the use of that particular fairgrounds. But we did have direct line of communication should that become a necessity. Distribute public education materials on cold information and the public health alert that was established by Dr. Walker in English and Spanish. We developed a blanket program request and asked the public to assist us. American Red Cross was running short on blankets, and I can't compliment Jim Money and the American Red Cross enough, but I think the public really needs to be pat on the back on this one. We saw over 500 blankets come in to fire stations over the next couple of days, and significant donations in the way of monetary. In fact, if you're trying to buy blankets, most of the distributors locally were out, and you could really only give a cash donation. We had to go outside the area to get additional blankets. County areas placed a mission request, that's part of our job, to the State Office of Emergency Services on behalf of the City of Modesto and Oakdale to utilize the National Guard armories, and they were to be staffed by American Red Cross volunteers. Our public information officer, David Jones, developed a plan and disseminated information to the news agencies on shelter and warming locations and cold weather tips. We developed a 2007 freeze preparation plan, as we always do in emergencies, an incident action plan that guides us through this process. We contacted the utilities, MID and TID, to make sure that their service plans or their formal plans included that they would not do service disconnects during this period of time. Between Friday and Tuesday, we opened shelters and warming centers. And there were three in Modesto, two in Truroc, one in Riverbank, and one in Oakdale. It was a little bit ironic. The two armories that we opened, we did not see a single visitor in those. We had existing capacity within the systems we had in place. We had standby facilities that were available if needed in Waterford, Houston, Ceres, and Patterson had a transportation plan to bring people from the west side into the central core of the county and utilize existing systems rather than open a specific system for very few people in their area. We continued with the area's conference calls throughout the three-day weekend into Wednesday of this week, and we began to watch the ag event begin to become a little more apparent. Dennis Gudgell and Milton O'Hare, we met several times throughout the week, and the ag commissioners were working closely with the growers to determine the direct and indirect impacts on ag and ag-related industries. We went back and looked at the 1998 freeze event, and we observed that packing plants, shipping, and transportation experienced a significant reduction in workforce, and so that concern began to look at the unemployment and the impacts that may come a little bit later in this event as the impacts are fully known. We experienced an LPG shortage in the southern part of the state between the suppliers and the distribution systems. Because of the wind machines and some of the facilities south of us, there was a shortage for a very short period of time with LPG. The Office of Emergency Services worked with the LPG suppliers in each of the local areas in making sure that the growers' needs were met. But south of us, there were some areas where they had about a 100-gallon limitation for delivery so that they could make sure everybody had fuel during that period. Friday, the CEO convened a meeting with the Ag Commissioner, the OES office, and County Council to determine the depth of this problem and make some determinations. As a result of that meeting, the CEO proclaimed a local state of emergency or a local proclamation on Friday evening. Our office, as required under the Emergency Services Act, we made notification to the governor's office, to the Office of Emergency Services, Friday night, and on Saturday morning, the governor declared the ag emergency for Stanislaus County. That brings you kind of up to date with the events from the human and the Office of Emergency Services time. Our events, I'd like to turn this back over to the CEO or to the Ag Commissioner.
Yes, we'll ask Milton to give us a brief update on known losses in agriculture.
Chairman O'Brien, members of the board, I'm Milton O'Hare. I'm the Assistant Agriculture Commissioner and Sealer of Stanislaus County. And I'm here to give you a preliminary estimate of the crop damage that was sustained in Stanislaus County over the last several weeks. We have a preliminary estimate of $2.8 million damage on primarily three crops that we believe meet the 30% threshold for federal assistance. Citrus at $859,000, broccoli at $908,000, spinach at $1,032,000. Again, I'd like to stress that these are preliminary estimates, as we're still seeing damage and reports of in our wholesale nursery, strawberries, also others. We have some specialty citrus crops here, some real small acreage. We're seeing some damage there. And also other leafy vegetable crops that we're still assessing. And so we're still working with industry to firm up these numbers and make sure that we get a better estimate over the next few weeks. Some of the damage will not be seen for days or weeks or even up to harvest, because as the crops unthaw, then you notice there's more damage. And there also may be the opposite of that. If damage that was initially thought was going to be there, as the weather warms up, they may recover, and we may see less damage, actually. So that concludes my report.
Okay. As a result of this information, the obvious costs associated with providing support and care to the human population, as well as the identified and expected losses to agriculture, I did on the 19th of September to proclaim the existence of a local emergency, and I did that in my official capacity as the director of the Office of Emergency Services. For that to continue, the Board of Supervisors is required to act today to issue your own proclamation, and then we will, for the duration of this local emergency, be requesting renewals of that every 2 weeks.
Any comments or questions from board members? Any comments from the audience? Is there a motion to adopt?
Also moved.
Motion by Supervisor Mayfield.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Grover. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, it came to my attention that the prior item, the 9:20 a.m. Public hearing regarding the annexation of territory to the Bystrom Lighting District did require action by the board to specifically make the findings as necessary and to authorize the clerk of the Board of Supervisors to oversee the tabulation of the votes and to submit the results to the Board of Supervisors at the scheduled board meeting on February 6th. So it would be appropriate to entertain a motion and take action on that particular item.
Not my first error, and it won't be my last.
I so move.
Have a motion?
I second that.
Second by Supervisor DeMartini. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. On to correspondence.
Actually, it was my error. I gave you a wrong advice, and I apologize for that. This board has received a copy of the Fire Life Safety Inspection Report for the Stanislaus County Honor Farm and Public Safety Center.
I refer to the Department of Environmental Resources.
This board has received a copy of the preliminary report and the draft environmental impact report for the proposed 2007 amendment to the redevelopment plan for the Houston Redevelopment Project from Urban Futures Incorporated.
Refer to Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports?
Chairman, I don't have a report, but I have a question. We have here in front of us Stanislaus County Elections 2008 calendar, and it shows February 5th circled as an election day. And I understand that there's some discussion going on moving our primary, but can there be some light shed on this? I think
I know a little bit about that. Now, the state is considering two primaries. One would be just presidential, and then everything else would be in June. And possibly with the presidential primary, they may have something about redistricting and term limits also as a special election. But I've paid very close attention to it because I run in that primary, but that is still scheduled for June. The addition would be, for the first time I can ever remember, two primaries.
Okay. Thank you. Do that again. What are you talking about?
The governor is proposing that we have a special election for just the presidential primary, with possibly two other things added on, like term limits and district elections for the state legislature. That would be a special election. And the reason for that is it would give California more influence in the open seat for president, rather than in June, it's usually all over with. So that's the reason it's being proposed. I don't know where that's going to go, but it's a possibility that we're going to have that special election.
Pardon me? What did you say?
I think it moved up the day previous years.
Yeah.
15 years ago, so that California would be a factor. The problem is, and the other states move theirs up.
So it's who gets ahead of who?
That is correct, and it has never been successful.
But I'm concerned, it seems like it's another $250,000 that's going to cost that side. Right, so why should we do that?
I don't know that we're going to have much say, but it will cost our general fund.
Whether we have a say or not, I mean, if it doesn't make sense to us here, why do it? Why would we support it? I mean, why could we not support it?
I'm not sure we have a choice.
Well, I have a choice. I mean, I think it's a waste of money, and I'm not going to go along with it. But if you want to go along with it, fine, but I'm not me. I mean, we're always making these rules up, it seems like, continually. We're going to change this so we can be ahead, which doesn't make any sense. Anyway, I said my two cents worth.
Any other
reports? It hasn't passed up there yet.
Any other board reports? Okay, legislative fiscal management report. Yes, I do have several items for you this morning. The first is good news. I would like to report that as a result of last week's meeting with Standard & Poor's, Stanislaus County's refunding COPs have been issued an A-plus rating, the highest rating in the history of Stanislaus County's debt issues. And I would particularly, last week I identified those persons who participated in the meeting with the rating agency, which included Patty Hill Thomas, Monica Nino Reed, Gordon Ford, Larry Haw, and Dean Wright from County Council's office. We would like to specifically identify Monica Nino Reed as the leader of this effort and the work that she's done in preparing for the presentation and carrying it out was a big factor in this rating. It will help our sale of these bonds and will, in fact, result in, I think, a better offering than we would otherwise have. But again, the best rating in the history of Stanislaus County. I do have a couple items relative to legislative update I'd like to share with you. The first is we have a number of bills that we're tracking, SB 5, which is a flood management bill relating to infrastructure bonds, AB 151, a Berryhill bill, custodial officers falling within the definition of peace officers. There are some cost implications with that. We're working with that. Infrastructure bonds, we're continuing to work on I-bonds, Prop 1B, transportation, SR 219 could benefit from that. We're looking at $15 million in our Phase 1 project for, say, Route 219, Kiernan Road, Prop 1E water. Department of Water Resources is proposing funding the evaluation of 7 of our project levies through Prop 1E funding, and that is good news for us. We did have a good meeting with Department of Water Resources, led by David Jones, our Director of Legislative Affairs, and Don Peterson, our legislative consultant out of Sacramento, as well as Supervisors O'Brien and Grover a couple weeks ago, and I believe it is paying dividends. Proposition 84, water bill. Department of Water Resources has proposed using $755,000 of funding for Oriston, but create a feasibility study, and we're still looking into the opportunities that Prop 84 could provide for our parks system. We're working now with our lobbyists to prepare bills for negative bailout, CSA fingerprinting for CalWORKs and food stamps, food inspection fee recovery for school inspections, exempting farms for small short-term quantities of hazardous materials. Williamson Act updates for smaller parcels, and reassignment of conflict of interest from four schools from the county to the County Board of Education. We believe that's an appropriate move. A number of federal issues that we'll be discussing with our federal representations in Washington, D.C. in the months of February and March. So we will have a busy legislative next 60 days, and I think I'll stop there.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask you? We're talking about, you mentioned Kernan, the funding on Kernan?
That's correct.
Okay, well, if the Vanessa B's right, then we're talking about going to Dale. I'm just going to guess now, $65 million, and you need another 40-some million to go the rest of the way. But what I'm amazed at is we're paying, it's going to cost us $20 million a mile. There's 5 miles from Salida to Kern, to McHenry. It's going to cost us, for that road, $20 million a mile. I've never heard of such a figure of $20 million a mile, you know, going through. Part of that is it's really farmland. Why would it cost so much money for that? And it seems like everybody's going to go to Dale Road. I mean, even the proposed development in Salida is going to go to Dale Road. After you get to Dale Road, it's only a two-lane road. Okay. After you get to Dale Road, where do you go then? This is most incomplete planning I think I've ever seen.
Well, we have a number of issues that we need to address. First, the cost implications. The largest cost driver of the road improvements is land acquisition. And purchasing the right-of-way is a significant cost to the state of California and local agencies that are participating in funding for the improvements to State Route 219. Because of the long-term impacts and the short-term impacts of the Kaiser Hospital, we're looking for ways to be able to move as efficiently as possible within the resources we have available to us. We don't have $100 million. We have the opportunity to use $60 million to do the improvements at Dale Road intersection and the improvements to four lanes between Dale Road and Highway 99. We also believe we have the opportunity within our funding available to us to signalize Tully Road and Carver Road, which would give us at least two lanes signalized between Dale Road and McHenry. The second phase of the SR 219 improvements would be improvements between Dale Road and McHenry Boulevard. The challenge, of course, is finding the additional $60 million or so, the largest percentage going to land acquisition for right-of-way. It's a big project.
Big project.
I would also like to announce that the State of the County address will be given by our chairman on January 30th at 9 a.m. We would invite all to attend. The broadcast is going to be taped and will be replayed on local cable access channels. So those of you who missed it the first time, we do want to provide you lots of opportunity to see it later.
We have a couple announcements. First, San Jose County Planning Commissioner's 30th Annual Workshop is Saturday, January 27th at 8:30 out at Harvest Hall. And then last, do we have a closed session? Jeff?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have a closed session conference with labor negotiator. The agency's negotiator is Richard Robinson, your CEO, and the labor organizations under consideration are the SEIU, AFSCME, United Domestic Workers, and County Attorneys Association. And this closed session is held pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. And we do not expect to report out anything to report on this.
At this point, we'll turn to closed session.
We're checking to make sure you're good.